Hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand new episode of The Awesome with Cody. I'm Cody. And continuing along with our month of love, the topic is romantic comedies that make me cry. Next up is a lesser-known movie by a fairly famous guy. Even though you may not know his name, you'll know one of his biggest movies. You'll know a lot of his movies by name. You might have not seen all of them, but there's one in particular, which is not the actual movie for tonight, but one in particular that everyone likes to watch around two times the year. One, which is Valentine's Day. The other is Christmas time. And that movie, well, I'll get to that in a minute. The movie we're talking about this week is About Time, famous is a different movie, About Time. It is written and directed by a gentleman named Richard Curtis. So he's the person I was talking about that you may know. He's done a few things. His most popular one, I would have to say, would probably be Love Actually. Many of you know it. Many of you love it. I don't know if too many people don't like it. It is an amazing movie in its own right, told in a very cool way. Much like this next movie, or the movie I'm talking about today, is. But the other movies he's done, if you've never seen About Time or Love Actually, which is just weird in general, he also created Bridget Jones' Diary. He wrote Notting Hill, and he wrote Four Weddings and a Funeral, all British movies. He directed Love Actually. He directed The Boat That Rocked, which is a pseudo, I don't want to say, it's not a mockumentary. It's based on a real thing, but that one's really fun too. But the one we're talking about today is he wrote and directed. It's called About Time. It stars three big names and a bunch of faces you'd recognize if you saw them. But the three big names are Donald Gleason, Rachel McAdams, and Bill Nighy. So let's break down who these people are. If you don't know who Donald Gleason is, most recently, he can be found in a few things. He most notably recently he plays General Hux in the newer trilogy of Star Wars movies. He's the general that leads the First Order. So he was in Force Awakens and Last Jedi and to be in the Episode 9, whatever that one's actually called. Let's see, what else has he done you may know? And more recently, the newest one, he is in, what is the name? Is it Peter Rabbit? Is that what it is? Yeah, Peter Rabbit. He plays a lead in that. You may not have seen it. If you have kids, you might have seen it. But anyways, he was in Mother, which was out last year. He had a lot of movies last year. He likes to do this thing where he does like a few movies and then like one movie and then a few movies and then like one movie. He did break that in 2015. He did quite a few movies, all excellent movies, by the way. He was in Ex Machina. He was in Brooklyn. He was in The Force Awakens and he was in The Revenant. To one of those movies, he was a main in. The other ones he was, General Hux is a pretty main character in Star Wars, but it wasn't Rey or Kylo Ren, but he was up there too. Last year he was in a bunch of movies as well. He was in American Made with Tom Cruise. He was in, like I said, Mother. He was in a movie called Crash Pad, which not a whole lot of people saw. He was in Goodbye Christopher Robin, which I think shamelessly got kind of tucked under the radar. And he was in Star Wars The Last Jedi. And then this year he was in A Futile and Stupid Gesture, which is a Netflix movie. Peter Rabbit, which it just recently got released. And A Little Stranger, which will be out later this year. And there's a few things he's been in. He's been a lot of stuff. Actually, you might know him from Harry Potter. He was Bill Weasley in the Harry Potter series, in Harry Potter Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2. Do you remember do you remember him at all? Is Bill Weasley, the eldest son of Arthur and Molly Weasley, he's the older son of Ron Weasley, or older brother of Ron Weasley. So there's him, there's the twins, and then Ron and his sister, if I'm not mistaken. I'm gonna look it up. He's the son of an actor named Brendan Gleeson, who played Alistair Moody, or Mad-Eye Moody, from the Harry Potter movies, so that helps any. No? Okay. He's done a few things. Rachel McAdams, a lot of you may know. She has been in a lot of things as well. She was in Doctor Strange. Most famous, I guess her most famous part was The Notebook, with Ryan Gosling. Another one of those big sappy movies. I don't actually like that movie as much to me, but it's a good movie. More notably, she was in Doctor Strange 2 years ago. She was in Southpaw. She was in Spotlight, which got a bunch of nominations and awards for stuff. I never saw Disobedience, which came out last year, but she's in a movie called Game Night this year. Comes out in a few weeks, if I'm not mistaken, or a month or something like that. But she's been in a lot of things. She was in Sherlock Holmes. She's in both Sherlock Holmes. She played the love interest, air quotes, for Sherlock in that one. But yeah, I mean, most notably, definitely you're going to know her from The Notebook. She's the female lead in The Notebook. If you don't know what The Notebook is, also probably not the best for you. She's in that. She's in this. And then Bill Nighy, not Bill Nye, but Bill Nighy is I believe is how you pronounce it. British actor. Also from the Harry Potter franchise. He was also in A Boat That Rocked, which is the other movie that Richard Curtis did. Probably, though, the most well-known of any of the movies he's done is Pirates of the Caribbean, he was in a couple of them. Dead Man's Chest is probably the most prolific, or one he's the most, because he played Davy Jones, the squid guy. That was him. He did the voice as well as some of the motion capture, and as well as played him when he was a live human being. He was in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which was one of my favorite movies. He was in the Underworld movies. He played Victor in those. He's been so much stuff. It's ridiculous. Most recently, he was in, let's see, biggest ones. The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. He's in both of those ones. He was in The World's End, which is the third movie. Well, he's in it. He did a voice in it. But the third movie of the Edgar Wright trilogy, the ones with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. Let's see, what else is he in that you may know? I have to say the most popular would be Davy Jones from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. He was in Harry Potter. He played Rufus. I'm gonna mess this up. Scrimgeour, I think it is a Scrimgeour. I can't remember how to pronounce it. I probably know if I actually had read the books, but I haven't read the books. So, but he was. He's in those movies too. But yeah, he's a pretty noticeable guy. If you saw him, you'd probably recognize him, pretty well. But yeah, so that's who's in it. But let's talk a little bit about the movie. So it is a romantic comedy. This one, unlike last week's movie, does make me cry, but it only makes me cry because it's very happy in it. The story itself, it's an interesting... Let's see how this... I put this... It's an interesting concept. So Domhnall Gleeson plays the son of Bill Nighy, who is... his only goal in life is to fall in love. He just wants to be in love. He believes he falls in love for the first time to a character with a character named Charlotte, who's played by Margot Robbie. You guys may know Margot Robbie. The reason I didn't bring her up first, she's not like a main in this movie. You would think so, being that the love interest of the main character. But she was in it very little bit. It wasn't, and it was only like her, let's see, third movie she's ever done. Oddly enough, the same year, she did The Wolf of Wall Street, which blew her career up completely. She played the wife of Leonardo DiCaprio's character. But in this movie, she plays the best friend of Domhnall Gleeson's character, Tim. His sister, Kit Kat, as they call her, Catherine, is best friends with Charlotte. He thinks he falls in love with her. But then the day after the big New Year's party, his dad brings him into the room and tells him a very, very big family secret. The family secret is this, and this is what plays into the title of the movie. The men in his family, on his father's side, have the innate ability to travel through time. Travel back in time, I should say. I know it sounds weird. So it's a very charming way of doing it. So at 21, his dad tells him this, says, hey, the men in our family on my side have the ability to travel in time. So the ability allows them to go back to any part of their own life and relive it. It's a very interesting concept. Like I said, all the movies I picked this month for these not only are romantic comedies that made me cry, but they have a very unique storytelling mechanic, as well as just a general interesting way of telling the story too, in a very non-fundamental way of telling the story, or the story itself is not very fundamental, but eventually normal. So this one has to do with time travel. So he can't go back in time to like kill Hitler or anything like that. But he can go back in his own timeline at any point to when he wants, and he can do things. He is warned by his dad that you have to be careful what you do. Just like any good time travel story, any change you make can drastically change going forward that your life and how things work. And I'll get to a little bit of the snafus about that in a little bit. But he basically decides to try to use this on Margot Robbie. So every time he interacts with her character, Catherine or Charlotte, at the beginning of this movie, he makes some kind of mistake. Like one of the first ones you see, he's a little too eager. She asks him to put sunscreen, like suntan lotion or sunscreen on her when they're bathing in the sunbathing his sister and her. And he's a little too eager. And then when he goes and he accidentally shoots all the cold sunscreen on her, embarrassing himself, he goes inside, reverses time, and then comes back. And you get to see him be nonchalant, like he's reading a book. He's like, hold on a second. Finishes where he's at, marks it, goes over and says, all right, let's go ahead and do this. And so he's able to change how it is. And so he keeps doing these things, trying to basically win her over. And then by the end of the summer, or the stay, the summer that she's there, he goes to her and finally says, you know, like, I don't know if you know this or not, but like, I'm in love with you. And she's like, well, it's my last night. I mean, we can't really do much, you know, now you should have told me before. There's you. You see what I'm saying here? So he goes back to the beginning, and then they basically kind of go through and ends up they never really get together. He believes the love of his life leaves him that summer, and you know, he's distraught. Well, then he goes on, he's getting ready to go, he's leaving his hometown, he's going to the city, and he's going to live with a family friend, and he's going to, you know, continue his career as a lawyer. So he goes through, and then one night a friend from back home comes out to visit him. They go out to this restaurant that his buddy told him about, and it's a very interesting restaurant. They do exist. It's not a thing he made up for this, but it's a pitch black restaurant. It's a dining blind, as I believe what they call it. So when you go in, you get brought to a table, and the restaurant is pitch dark. You can't see anything. So it's supposed to heighten your sense, your other senses, your feel, your sense of touch, your sense of hearing, your smell, your taste, because you lose your blind essentially in this restaurant. And the waiters all wear night vision goggles so they can see, they don't run into you. And him and his buddy get set next to this table of girls, two girls, one who is Rachel McAdams. I know that's probably not a big shocker to you. And her friend, and they start up a conversation together, and they hit it off. And so at the end of the night, they go out. His friend is trying to get with the other girl, and of course he has fallen madly in love with this, with Rachel McAdams' character, Mary, who oddly enough is his mother's name as well. And so they go about, and it's a very good thing, and they plan to meet up again. And then he goes back to his house where he's staying with a family friend. Turns out that the family friend, who's a playwright, is struggling with a divorce, and his daughter's a whore, as he likes to call it. He's very upset. He's a drunk. He had his big play premiered that night and did not go well. So Tim decides to use his power of time travel to help. This is where he learns his first lesson. When he does this, he goes in the past, he fixes it, goes back to the present, and realizes because he was at the play that night helping it succeed, because it was supposed to be a really good play, but it was ruined by one line forgotten by an actor, which is a really funny thing too, because another Harry Potter alum was in that scene as well. As well as a guy from another one of my favorite movies we'll talk about one of these days. He mistakenly thinks it's one actor. He gets him really upset and ends up being the other actor. And so he has to go and fix that. And so in doing so, when he goes back to the present, he never went to the restaurant with his friend, which means he never ended up meeting Mary. So now he knows all about this girl that he's in love with that seems to also like him, but now he has to figure out how to see her again. So he goes back and he tries to go to the restaurant without him, and then they've already gone by that point. So he knows that she's a big fan of Kate Moss. Big fan. She's obsessed with Kate Moss. So he goes back. He goes to this Kate Moss exhibit thinking he's going to run into her one time, and he does, but then he realizes, wait a minute, I know all about her, but she doesn't know who I am. And so I seem like this creeper. So then he finds out she has this boyfriend that she met at a party after the fact of the dinner that they originally had together. So he would have been with her other than that, but then he missed that chance. So she has this boyfriend now. So he asks all these bizarre questions and ends up going back in time to the day of that party, meeting her, talking her into leaving the party, and then going in having this amazing time together, and then they fall in love the proper way, without any tricks or anything. He knows about her, but they're going to share that again. He knows how to talk to her, blah, blah, blah. and they go from there. So that's the gist of how he falls in love with her, and it's about the rest of the movie is about them in their relationship together and him doing things better way. Like, one of my favorite scenes is when they actually get together the first time. He backs out of the room. He's like, hold on a second. And essentially has sex with her three times because he goes back, does it again, goes back, and it keeps progressively getting better because he knows how her body works and what she likes, so he can please her more. And so you can kind of see, like, they're really good. Like, the first time, he's like, she's like, oh, it was pretty good. He's like, oh, pretty good. No, I mean, it's good. And he goes back and he's like, oh, that was amazing. And he goes, hold on. And he goes it again. And she's like, that was mind blowing, because obviously he's gotten better at it. You only see him do it three times. We don't know how many times he actually did it. And then she makes fun of him. He's like, oh, my wild stallion can only do it once. And he's like, once. And to him, it's like three times. To her, it's been once. But, you know, little fun, little time travel joke there. So the whole thing about this movie is he gets to spend time with the people he loves the most and the people he gets to, that he likes. And he gets to do things right. Well, eventually they get married. They have a kid. His sister, who is not in a good place in her life, makes one mistake where she's in this on and off again relationship with this mentally abusive relationship, I should say, very emotional, with this guy that she met at the party that he first learned about the time travel, or the day before he learned the time travel, that night before that New Year's party or whatever it was. I guess it was New Year's, was it? I can't remember what it was. I think it was New Year's. It was New Year's because they're like, countdown and the kiss. Any which he gets corrected. I didn't go over that. She has this relationship with this guy, and they have this argument. She drives drunk, gets in an accident, almost dies. So he thinks, I'm going to go back and help her fix this. So he actually convinces her that, hey, I can travel in time. She's like, well, this is bullshit. They do it. She freaks out. They were able to change it basically before he stops her from meeting him. Of course, she knows what it is because he brought her back. So she was able to react and, like, you know, kicks him in the dick at one point, irreparably changing everything. But when he goes back to the present, he ends up finding out that because he went back, his life has changed in weird ways. One of the ways is when he went back, he had a daughter. When he comes back to the present, he now has a son, and he doesn't know why. So he goes and talks to his dad about it. His dad's like, well, the thing is, it's all about time and place. So if you make any one little difference, everything can change. One sperm goes over and gets past another one, versus the other. And boom, you go from having a daughter to having a son. It's a very interesting butterfly effect type thing. So he has to go back. He has to choose. Like, he loved his daughter and he doesn't know anything about his son. So he goes back and undoes the change of saving his sister, or the pain and everything. So, he has the daughter again. He has to go back and do things. So then he decides to change her life a little differently. So she still has the accident. They go and they sit in there and force her to basically change her life. And then he convinces her that his friend, who he kind of doesn't really like, Jay, who he was originally with at the restaurant that met Mary, he convinces her that Jay's always had a crush on Kit Kat. So they get together. And so it goes from there. But then, because of what his father said, he can only go back as far as one time before he changes anything. So he can go back as far as he wants, but he can't change anything. If he changes anything, then his life can irreparably change. He may never marry. He may not have kids. The kids could be different. The kids could not be, you know, they couldn't exist. She couldn't be in his life. Anything like that. So he has to be very careful when he goes back past a certain point and makes any changes. So he can go back and relive a day, but as long as he doesn't change anything, nothing really changes in the future. So it's a very complicated way of doing it. It's a very clever way of telling the story. And so he goes through, and at one point his father ends up, they find out he has cancer, so he's going to die. So he keeps going back in time to see his father, because he can go back to his own timeline where his father's alive, and they can have this conversation, you know, back and forth. It's a very, very poignant part of the movie. It's very rough. So it's very interesting to see. Yeah, so that's really it. The movie has a lot of interesting things it does with it. He kind of learns lessons to what he needs to do. And his father told him one thing is like, you know, instead of going back to try to change things irreptically, how about you just live your day, your life like you normally do every day, then go back and see how you would do it differently. And you'll learn to enjoy your life better. You'll see the small things in life. And eventually he learns that, you know, he doesn't need to go back every time to fix it or relive the life. And eventually he just kind of stays in it in the day forever. But, you know, if anything ever goes bad, he can always run back and change little things when he needs to. But he doesn't need to use it as a crutch or how to live his life just by the time travel and things like that. So kind of fun little way in it. One of my things about this movie is it's got a lot of logistics in it for the time travel thing. There's a lot of unanswered questions, how things work, what happens, how can people tell things, all these different ones. And so there's a lot, there's these four, I guess you could say plot holes. So I'll read you this little thing. So Megan Gibson, a writer at Time Magazine, commented, "Sci-fi fans out there will likely won't be able to see the film's charm through the gaping time travel plot holes pointing out that the main rules, as explained by Tim's father, are violated." So this is where it goes through, right? Richard Curtis created his own rules for time travel in this universe that he created, right? So this gentleman named Mark Kermid observed that writer Richard Curtis set up his own rules of temporal engagement, only to break them willy-nilly whenever the prospect of an extra hug rears its head. So Megan goes on and talks about these plot holes. So number one, the only male members of the family can travel in time. Number two, only travel to the past is possible. And three, it is impossible to travel back before you were born. And then four, traveling back to a time before your child is born may cause different children to be born and the original child to be lost. So that's part of it. I don't really, it's a fun story. You know, you're looking too much into it, but really if you think about it, there's a lot of unanswered questions that we don't know fully all the different rules, but we don't know everything, how it works too. So like, there's other reviewers that have criticized the time travel rules in it, but it's not really, you're not looking at, say, this isn't gospel. We're not saying this is real. The thing, it's just a fun story to tell, and the plot holes don't matter. But if you really think about him, dive into him, he doesn't really break his own rules too often. And he does, he goes through and fixes them because he goes through and does things. It doesn't matter. If you enjoy the movie, you enjoy the movie. Critics are there to write about stuff they don't like because they suck and they don't know how to do it themselves and they can't do it themselves. So they feel they need to drag other people down. And as you, if you've ever listened to me on my other podcast with my friends, Comes Naturally, you realize that I hate critics more than anybody probably should. And I think the whole critic system is drastically flawed and it needs to be changed, if not abolished altogether, because anyways, critics are the fucking worst. I digress. I can talk about that another time. I'm ready to write a blog about that. Anyways, that's it for this week's episode. We were talking about Time. I thought of the plot hole thing I threw in there because I wanted you guys to realize it's not a perfect, I know it's not a perfect movie, but it's a really fun movie, very touching movie. And I enjoy watching it a lot, and I think you guys should like it too. If you like romantic comedies and you're not afraid to cry, I'll give you this little caveat, though, like I did last week's episode. Don't watch this with someone you're on the outs of with, like if you're having in a bad relationship with, because it can be very temperamental to what's already a fragile situation anyways. But unlike last week's movie, you should watch this with anybody you care about, because it's a really good movie, and I think you should everyone should experience it. But don't watch it in front of anybody you don't want to cry in front of, because most likely you're gonna cry at one point, because it's it can be very 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 sad at times. Anyways, that's it for this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. I will talk to you all next week when we talk one more movie in the same realm of the romantic comedies that make me cry. I won't spoil anything yet of what it is. Actually, I can, if you really want me to, tell you what I plan on watching. So if you want to watch it before next week's episode airs, you definitely can. Let me pull my little list here, make sure I'm correct on the movie, next movie I'm watching. So I don't, like, just mouth off on stuff here. Let's see. Next week's movie will be Before We Go, which was directed by Chris Evans, Captain America himself. So if you want to watch that before next week's episode, when you listen to me talk about it, you can listen in as I talk about what's awesome about it. And we'll go from there. Oh, if you're wondering, the other theme of these movies this month is very music heavy, and this movie is very heavy. I didn't even get into the music half of it. There's just like in Love Actually, there's a big musical theme throughout the whole thing, as a lot of Richard Curtis's movies have, especially the ones he writes and directs. But there's this one particular song that kind of goes throughout the movie itself. Just watch it, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. There's quite a bit of amazing music in this. Yeah, you should check it out. About time. That's it for this week's episode. I'm Cody, and this was Be Awesome With Me, Cody. Talk to you guys next week. Stay awesome.